We began a series last week called Playing God, and we are dealing with the issue of power. For some of you, that word bothers you. Consider it influence, consider it position in your life. But we made the case last week that we all have power at different levels, at different stages in life, for different periods of time. And many of us don't think of ourselves as powerful people, but if you're an older sibling, you have power. If you're a younger sibling and now you're bigger than your other siblings, you now have newfound power. If you're a parent, you have power. If you're a senior in high school, you have some measure of power over freshmen. If you are a volunteer coach, you have power. If you're a paid coach, you have power. If you're a manager, even if it's a middle-level manager, if anybody answers to you, you have power. If you're a shift leader, you have power. If you own the company, you have power. If you vote, you have some measure of power. Last week, we looked at a conversation between Jesus and Pilate, and if you missed that, I encourage you to get that on a CD after church today or download that through iTunes and take a listen to that. If you're taking notes, basically what we said last week is this, that power is a stewardship. And that means that power is given to you. And if it is given to you, it can be taken away. And if it can be taken away, then any power, any influence, any position you have is temporary. Power is a stewardship. It is temporary. And if it's been given to you by someone, then that means you're accountable to the one who's given it to you. So your power, your influence, your position is a stewardship. It's temporary, and you're accountable. Now, we ended last week with a question. And the question is basically this, that if God has allowed me for this period of time to have this level of influence or this level of, or this position or any degree of power, whether it's in any area, whether it's in your family, whether it's in business, whether it's socially, the question is, if God has allowed me to have that power, why? Why has he allowed me to have that? If you got a job, you were hired by a company and given some degree of power, but you were hired with their agenda in mind, not yours. So when you were hired, they basically hired you to sell for them, to represent them, to produce a product for them. And if you along the way end up doing your own agenda rather than their agenda, then they'll remove that power from you. They will let you go. They will free you up to find another job. You will be fired. Why? Because you abused the power that was given to you. You did not represent what their agenda was. Now, if you, through the course of your life, have ever acknowledged or recognized that God is the source of your power, that it is given to me in my family, it's given to me in my community or work, then he must have something in mind. That there must be a purpose for the power that's given me. It means that God must have an agenda. It is not given to me for my agenda or my purposes, but that I've been given power for a period of time for his agenda and his purpose. Now, this is so important if you're in your 20s. This is so important if you're starting a career. This is so important if you're in college. Or this is important if you have kids, if you're married, if you have a job. This issue is critical to you. Why? Because today, the passage we're going to look at, Jesus shows us what God intends for us to do with the power that he's given us on loan, with the stewardship he's put in our hands and entrusted to us, with the influence that he has allowed us to have over people in our lives. And Jesus does what he does today in such a dramatic way that reveals why God allows us to have the influence that we have in our lives. Today's story actually takes place before the story we looked at last week. It actually happens on the Thursday before Good Friday, which means that there's only about 24 hours between what we're going to read today and Jesus hanging on the cross. Now, I want to read it to you, but it's probably familiar to you, and yet there's powerful dialogue enclosed in this story. John chapter 13, let's start in verse 1. It was just before the Passover feast, and Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. And having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them what? The full extent of his love. The full extent of his love. John says basically, like, looking back as I'm writing this story, I realize now that when Jesus did this, he was showing us the full extent of the love that he had for us. Jump down to verse 3. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. Jesus understood that power was a stewardship. It was given to him. And that he had come from God and was returning to God. Now, just a short side note. The actual Greek here is that all things were put into his hands. All authority was granted to him by God. And then that little phrase, it's returning to God, is actually going to God. And the reason that's important to understand that, actually, it's translated properly up in verse 1, which says, go to the Father. He says, I have been sent from God and I am going to God. That is important to what we're about to read simply because of this. That there are, you know, sometimes some confusion over who God is. And if you believe that Jesus is God and he's just returning to himself, then that undermines everything else in this passage that Jesus has said. Because the entire point of this passage is that God has given this authority to me. That he has placed all things under me. And who gave it to himself? It wasn't himself. It was given to him by God. And therefore, Jesus, as he's going to point out, is accountable for the power that was given to him. Now, we need to understand the scene. What is about to transpire? They're in a room together. They're about to celebrate the Passover meal. And Jesus is about to change the meaning of that entire event. An event that has had a particular meaning for generation after generation after generation. These disciples, good Jewish boys, grew up knowing that the Passover meal was representative of Egypt and Moses and the night when the angel of death went over the land, killing the firstborn prior to them being freed as a people. That's what this Passover meal was all about. And here Jesus is about to change the entire meaning of this meal. And he recognizes in this moment that all authority has been given to him. So what we have is that Jesus understands that he's the most powerful man in the room. In fact, we could say not only is the most powerful man in the room, but at this point, most powerful man in the world. And the drama here for us, the question that begs for us, is what do? When you realize that you're the most powerful person in the room, if you're a dad or a father or a husband, what do? When you realize that you're the most powerful person in the home, that everything is leveraged by you, or you're a business owner, what do when you realize and it dawns on you that you're the most powerful person in the building? Or you realize at this moment, for this period of time, for this season, I'm the most powerful person in the office, that I hold more influence or power than most people in my school or in my division or on my shift or in my organization. What happens when you find that you're not just a senior in high school, but you're sort of like the senior? You have influence over your friends, or you're a shift leader and you have influence over the people under you, or you're an office manager and you have influence and power and position, or you're a chairman or you're a president. What do when you realize you're the most powerful person in the room? Even if it's a small realm, even if it's like eight people and they answer to you, or you have some friends and they look to you for sort of the direction, and or maybe it's just a matter of getting a big unexpected bonus check and all of a sudden you feel powerful. What am I going to do with all of this? How do you react when you feel that way, even if it's just for a moment? That's why this story is so powerful for us. Because John, as he reflects back and writes this chapter, shows that Jesus understands that he's only hours from the cross. And he's about to do the most extraordinary thing that any human being has ever done in history, and that's to pay for the sins of the entire world. He was the most powerful person in the room. And look what happens next. It's so amazing. Look at verse 4. So he got up from the meal and took off his outer clothing. I just want to pause there, because this outer clothing thing here, it's understood generally that he wore a seamless robe, which is why it was so valuable and auctioned off at his crucifixion. In that time, clothes were often made from strips of clothing, but he wore a seamless robe of some sort. In fact, if we read through the New Testament, we see that when Jesus visited the synagogues, he was often invited to read the scriptures publicly. That he had a public persona as a teacher, even sort of a rabbi. He was seen as that. And in fact, because of that, some commentaries believe that what he wore, his outer garment, was actually a rabbinical robe, having the tassels woven into it and everything else, representing that power, that authority, that position as a rabbi. And suddenly, as Jesus realizes that he's the most powerful person in the room, the very next thing he does is to take off his symbol of power, to remove the outward symbol of authority. And so he took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. Now, when these guys arrived at this upper room for the Passover meal, they assumed that there would be servants there. And whether through the rush of trying to arrange it, maybe they had forgotten to have a servant there who would then wash their feet and sort of serve them the dinner. Or perhaps the servant was there and Jesus, knowing what he was about to teach, maybe dismissed him. We don't know, but they arrived and there's no servant in the room. And Jesus, or as John writes this, he points out that Jesus, realizing that he's the most powerful person in the room, the very next thing he does is take off his symbol of authority and wraps a towel around his waist. Now, at this point, the disciples knew what was coming. And it made them very uncomfortable. Because suddenly Jesus, going from the position of the most powerful person in the room, takes on the position of a servant. And is about to do the thing that you hire somebody to do. And he wraps the towel around them, and they start to squirm. Verse 5. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. And he came to Simon Peter, who said, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" In other words, Peter says, whoa, time out. You know, it was like only two chapters ago that I saw you raise a guy from the dead. And it was only two chapters before that that you walked up to a guy, reached out and touched his eyes and healed his blindness that he had had from birth. And now you're going to take those healing hands and you're going to wash my feet? How do you think, Jesus, that I'm going to let the greatest man in the room suddenly become the lowest man in the room? I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not sure. Jesus, I should have offered to do it. But when we came in here, all of us, every one of us 12 guys, sort of felt like that was a little bit beneath us. And so none of us jumped in. There's no way that I can allow you to do this. In verse 7, Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing. But later, you'll understand." And in so many words, Jesus is saying, guys, this isn't about foot washing. I'm about to teach you a lesson because my time is running out. And in only a few hours, the teaching time is done. And in these last moments, I'm going to teach you a lesson that is so important. I have taught it before. I've said it. I've been saying it all along. You've heard it. I've explained it. But tonight, I want to show you in a way that you will never forget. Because if we're to succeed on the mission that God has given us, Jesus would say, we cannot afford to miss this lesson. This is what you do when you realize you're the most powerful person in the room. Verse 12, jump on down. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Now, there are visual things happening here that we miss when we just read this. But the Passover meal is laid out. Everybody sort of has an assigned seat. And there's a specific place for the person who has the most power, kind of the leader of the family, which I'm sure was assigned to Jesus. He voluntarily got up, left the position of authority, took on the role of a servant, did the washing of the feet, and then returned to his position of power. And he goes on. He says, "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am." In other words, hey, you already recognize that I'm a great teacher. You already recognize that I'm sort of a rabbi. You call me Lord, which is a title of great respect fit for Old Testament kings. And I don't deny any of that. But there's more. "Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." In other words, he says, this isn't about foot washing, but this is about removing any excuse you could ever dream up not to serve one another. I am teaching you what to do when you realize you're the most important person in the room. You have more power than people below you. This is what we're called to do when we understand that God has given us for a season of time the position, the authority, the influence, the power that he's given us, whether it's in our family or our organization or our social circles or in our school. John says, look, when Jesus realized that God had exalted him to a place of power, Jesus turns and says, I want you to see how we're to use the power that God gives us. Because when God gives us influence, even if it's only temporary, even if it's only for a season of time, even if it's only for over a few people, if there are people looking to you, you need to take off your symbol of power and find a way to serve them. If you're taking notes, I've just said it this way, that God calls us to use our power to serve those around us. He calls us to use whatever power He's given us, because power is a stewardship. It's temporary, and you're accountable. And we're to use whatever influence, whatever power, whatever position He's given us to serve those around us. Verse 15, he goes on, he says, I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. And then he gives the principle. He's given the lesson, he's given the illustration, he's given the application, but here comes the principle. Verse 15, I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. No servant is greater than his master. Say that with me. No servant is greater than his master. That principle underlies this entire thing. Guys, say that with me because you need extra. No servant is greater than his master. Right? This is especially important for men. I know that's an overgeneralization. But Jesus is saying to the disciples, you guys know this. This isn't a surprise to you. You see me as a master and see yourselves as my followers, servants, if you will. Just as I see God as my master and I serve Him, so you see me as your master and you serve me. No servant is greater than his master. And I just served you. And so I've just removed every excuse you could ever dream up in your entire life not to serve those people around you. Even if you have position over them. Even if you have influence. Even if you're the most powerful person in the room. And Jesus would say, if you ask me why God has given me power, it's so that I can elevate those around me, so that I can leverage my greatness for the benefit and the sake of those under me. And then he closes John this passage. He says, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you believe them. No, he says, you will be blessed if you do them. You see, there will come a point in your life when we see that we have a little more power than the other people around us, we have a little more influence, we have a little more authority, maybe a small context like your family, maybe a larger context like your shift at work, or you're in your company, or an organization, or maybe even at a city level. I don't know what will happen in your life. But the question for you, if you're a Christian, and if you're here today and you're not really kind of committed to that, you're not a Christian yet, you're sort of off the hook. Right? This might be a great story, and that's fantastic, but if you're a follower of Jesus, it goes much deeper, and you're more on the hook. Why? Because Jesus shows that when we have power, we're to use it to elevate those around us. And the reason this is so powerful for us is because we don't do it. See, if we're honest, like when I realize that I have power, I want to leverage it for me. I want people to do things for me. I want people to ask me questions that I know the answers to so they can say, oh, he's so godly. He knows so much Bible. Right? And we want to be seen as valuable. So we tend to use our power to gain more power, or we tend to leverage our power to protect the power that we've already gained. And Jesus says, look, remember what I did. And no servant is greater than his master. And the moment that we see that we're the most powerful person in the room and we don't do this, if you're a Christian, basically you're saying, I'm greater than my master. I know Jesus served those who were less than him, but I'm better than that. And when we use our power for ourselves and refuse to elevate those people around us, it's like, God, thanks for asking your son to die for us. I really appreciate all of the forgiveness, but I'm a little bit better than him. Because the very thing he asked me to do, I'm not sure that I'm going to do that. And you're like, well, Seth, I'd never say that. That's exactly his point. Because Jesus says, if I do this for you, the moment you refuse to do this, it is an extreme declaration of arrogance. Saying that I don't do what Jesus did for me. And when you realize that you're the most powerful person in the room, most important person, or maybe have some more influence, a little bit higher position, a little more authority, immediately look for ways to elevate other people in the room. That's the reason God gave you power or influence or authority or position. And sometimes men, and I don't necessarily want to pick on men, but we struggle with this probably a little bit more. But sometimes guys will ask me, well, Seth, and ladies, you'll probably find this funny. How can I get my wife to submit to me? Right? Exactly. So how do I basically get those people under me to do what I want them to do? How do I get people to obey me? How do I get people to treat me with the respect that is due me? And I just sort of want to shoot back, well, how about trying what Jesus did to get you to submit to Him? Yeah, but Seth, that might not work. And I'll be honest, often it doesn't necessarily work. But that's not even the right question, is it? In any realm, if we ask, in any most powerful person in history, take off a symbol of authority and wash their feet. Now, those of me, like I'm the most powerful person in the room, as soon as we go there, if we're a believer, if we're a follower of Jesus, if we would call ourselves a Christian, we have just abandoned the most important illustration or lesson that Jesus left us with in terms of service. Now, if you're not a Christian, I would understand perhaps why you struggle with Christianity, because you've probably been around too much of us, because we often resist this. But if you had been a fly on the wall and seen Jesus, watched how He acted, heard the things that He said, you would have been overwhelmed by His humility. But see, more than 2,000 years later, and we know Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, all of these guys, we know them. And sort of, even in their lifetimes, they became like rock stars in Jerusalem, right? They, after God raised Jesus from the dead, there are like thousands of people suddenly joining the church. In fact, in one day, over 3,000 people joined the church in a single day and came to faith in Jesus Christ. It was like crazy growth. And these were the guys at the center of the attention. These were the guys that had been with Jesus. And they could leverage that power any way they wanted, but they got the lesson. They understood, trusted men, went out and changed the world. Why? Because they realized that if you're the most powerful person in the room, it's not about you. It's about those around you. They recognized that no servant is greater than his master. And when the master washed their feet, they lost all of their excuses not to serve other people. They were famous, they were sought after, they were popular, but it never went to their heads. They had power and did not abuse it. Now, like I said, I keep coming back to this today and apologize for that, but guys, this whole idea often threatens us. And that's one of the reasons I want you to get last week's sermon. Because oftentimes what we say is, I have so much to lose. But if you listen to last week's sermon, you'll understand that anything that you think that you have to lose isn't really yours anyway, because it was given to you in the first place. And I just want to kind of put this out there. You will lose it. It is only temporary. It will be taken away from you. And in fact, you can put a goal card on your desk or on your fridge or wherever you're going to see it. My goal is to give away my power. But that threatens us because we think, I worked so hard to get it. I worked hard to get to this position. I worked hard to gain leverage in my organization. I worked hard to kind of get this position in this shift or in this kind of whatever it is, in this organization, in this situation. I worked hard to have people take me seriously. And if I make other people look good, I might lose some of that influence. If I sort of elevate those people around me, I may not be as respected. They may not look to me as much because they might start to look to someone else. But see, that all depends on who you think the power belongs to. If you think that you have any power or influence because of you, and it came from you, you're wrong. Because if you follow Jesus, if you believe the Bible to be true and take it seriously, then you understand that your power, your influence, your authority, your position was given to you by another. So you've got to ask, well then why? Why me? Why now? Why in this family? Why in this school? Why in this office? Why on this shift? Why in this building? And Jesus says, never forget the servant is not greater than the master. So you need to find ways to elevate those people around you. I did it for you, and you've got no excuse, Jesus would say. And rather than threatening, this ought to be liberating for us, right? Because it frees us, it breaks the power of self-centeredness in our lives. It breaks the power of selfishness in us. And life is far less stressful when you decide to give away power rather than fight to hang on to it and to keep it and to maintain it. Some of the most worried, stressed out, upset, unhappy people I find are those that are fighting to maintain their power, maintain their position, maintain their influence, that they feel slipping away either from age or because of their finances changing or because there's a new person on the board or even at church. There's a new person in the rotation of junior church. There's a new person mowing. There's a new singer or musician on the team, or there's a new pastor on staff, or there's a new person on the, you know. The people that fight to hang on to that and maintain it and to keep it and leverage it are the most unhappy, stressed out, worried people that I know. And you will experience far less anxiety if you decide to give away the power that God has granted you by using what God has given you for the benefit and the sake of others around you. And we sometimes, especially as guys, we see this as weakness. We need to understand, if you're a student of history at all, you know that giving away power is not weakness, but actually a sign of strength and security. In fact, down through the ages of history, by far the majority of those people that have influenced thinking and culture and thought and societies and cultures have been those people who gave away power, almost no exceptions. I mean, let's face it, would you consider Jesus a weak person? Now, I love history. Want to draw your attention to somebody. Actually, it's somebody that you all carry a picture of, almost everybody. I brought my picture today with this person. If you're listening on CD or online, this is a dollar bill. You guys all know who this picture is, right? You can't even see it, but you know. This is George Washington, a person with immense power and influence. Now, how much influence does it take to get on U.S. currency? Right? I mean, this guy had what it took. He had power. He had influence. Pretty powerful man. Now, I don't know if you've ever studied him, or maybe you've forgotten everything you learned about him in history class. Extraordinary man, amazing individual, fantastic, deep, solid ethics and character. Now, I want to read you a couple quotes from a book called Founding Brothers by a guy named Joseph Ellis. Let me pull those out here if I can find them. The point of this today is that using our power for the sake of others is not a sign of weakness, but extraordinary strength and security. Listen to this. It is crucial to recognize that Washington's extraordinary reputation rested less on his prudent exercise of power than on his dramatic flair for surrendering it. Upon learning that Washington intended to reject the mantle of emperor. Now, remember, George Washington was president once. He was president twice. President three times. And then they wanted to do what? They wanted to make him king. Because that's all they had known, really. And this whole idea of a republic was still new to them. He was a brilliant military strategist, brilliant officer. He almost single-handedly helped us, you know, turn the corner and win the revolution. He was the most powerful man in the room. He controlled the army. He controlled the nation. And the King of England, recognizing this, hears that he may turn down the opportunity to be placed in the position of king or emperor of a new nation. A new nation that had by far more resources than England. Upon learning that Washington intended to reject the mantle of authority, no less an authority than George III, because remember, this would make Washington equal with King George. He observed, and this is a quote from King George, if he does that, if he rejects the opportunity to be king, if he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. You see, this comes from a man who understood that he was only the king because his dad was the king, and he was only the king because his dad was the king, and he was intoxicated with maintaining that power, fighting to keep the control. And he hears of a man rising through the ranks, gaining influence, gaining power, finally so that he has the opportunity to become the king. And he says, if he actually walks away from that, he's the greatest man in the world. And true to his word, on December 22nd, 1783, Washington surrendered his commission to the Congress, then meeting in Annapolis. And he said this, "Having now finished the work assigned me," he announced, "I now retire from the great theater of action." And in doing so, he became the supreme example of the leader who could be trusted with power because he was always ready to give it up. That's what you do when you realize that you're the most powerful person in the room. Understanding that power or influence or authority is a stewardship. It's temporary. And you're accountable. Now, can you imagine how different the world would be? How different America would be if the church down through the ages had practiced this and understood it? How much more influence would we have with the greater world if we understood that power wasn't something to be gained or leveraged or to be won, but to give away and to use for the benefit of others? Imagine how different Europe would be today if the church had used its power or influence for the benefit of other people down through the years of history rather than trying to control and maintain and to gain more power. Because when we see that we have any degree of power or influence, we immediately need to seek ways to elevate those around us. The church probably has lost its influence and been marginalized in our culture because it has lost sight of this very principle. And when we follow the example of Jesus Christ, when we give away power that we have been given on loan in an appropriate way, we gain influence. Because everybody recognizes the maturity and the character that's required to do that. And it's revealed only when we take off the symbol of authority and power to serve those people around us. You know, just one last thought. There was another powerful man, King Solomon, who said this. In fact, I think I even printed it for you. He said, "Do not withhold good from those who deserve it when it is in your power to act." So, what's that look like in your home? What's that look like in your office? What's that look like in your school? What's that look like in your plant? If you decided that Jesus was your master and no servant is greater than him, and if you sought to leverage whatever influence you have for the sake of other people, if you took off the outer symbols of authority so that you can elevate those people around you, if you recognize that your power is temporary and that you're accountable for it, so you use it well. If you do that, you will be like your Savior. And probably, as a result, be entrusted with even greater influence after that. But if not, you'll spend the rest of your life trying to hang on to the very thing that will be taken, and you'll end up with nothing to show for it. So what do? When you realize you're the most powerful person in the room? And would you be willing to use it to elevate those people around you? Your Savior did it. And we're still talking about it 2,000 years later. Let's pray. Father, this is so much easier for us to talk about than to really do. And some of us work in businesses where this is not celebrated. And Lord, some of us grew up in families where it was never modeled. And some of us are in an education system where it's all about getting more and keeping it. But Lord, in your grace, please give us the wisdom to know what to do. I pray for every dad or husband, or guy who's about to get married but has a tainted view of marriage, that we would be the greatest servants with the greatest humility. Lord, I pray for our church that somehow we would regain our place of influence in the community, not because we've acquired power, but because we can become better and better at giving it away. Lord, for those who've rejected Jesus because they've been around too many of us, I pray that that changes. And that we learn how to respond appropriately when we recognize that we're the most powerful people in the room. It is not in us to do this, so remind us. Help us be creative. Bring us to a place where we follow Jesus in a sincere way because we've learned to use our influence for the sake of others. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.